I'm supposed to be recording this, although, anyway, I always forget to push the button. Anyway, so we're not in a storm like the fishermen were, the lesson of the gospel is not only about what Jesus did 2,000 years ago. If it were only about what Jesus did a long time ago, well, then it would be of very limited value to us. It would just be an interesting historical curiosity. Our concern is about the storms that we face right now, and the most obvious one, of course, is the global pandemic. We've been in this storm for a long time already. So what do we learn about how to deal with storms? Well, let's go back to the experience of the apostles. Now, they were in a real storm, and the real fishermen in the real storm knew they were really in trouble. The boat is filling up. So this is not an irrational fear. They're not just panicking because they're having a panic attack or any exaggerated fear. This is real fear. A normal fear, in fact, because the boat is filling up with water, and if something doesn't change, they're doomed. So they're afraid. Anybody would be. That's no surprise. Anybody would be, except Jesus is not. And the contrast couldn't be any greater. Jesus is not at all concerned about the storm. He's completely relaxed. They're terrified, he's asleep on a cushion. The cushion represents how comfortable he is. That's Jesus' attitude towards storms. No big deal. It doesn't concern him at all. So they awaken him with some judgment against him, but he doesn't. He ignores that part of it, and he wakes up, and he immediately calms the storm, the very change that they practically despaired of. And then he asks them the key question: why are you terrified? Do you not yet have faith? Now, if he had asked them this before they calmed the storm, if he had said, why are you terrified? They would have said, well, because we're in the middle of a dangerous storm. But he asks them why they are terrified after the sea is already calm. Why are you terrified? Do they have faith now? Maybe they didn't have faith before, but do they have faith now that they saw him work this clear miracle? And this is the question that is addressed to us. Jesus addresses it to us, because we're looking at this event after the miracle has already taken place. Do we not yet have faith? Do we not yet have faith? Now, it's easy to have faith when the sea is calm. It's easy to have faith when life is going along fine. It's easy to have faith after our sufferings are over. But what about when we are in a violent storm? Or when a violent storm is approaching? Well, this is it. We should not forget that we are already in the after moment. We're not in the situation of the apostles before they saw the miracle. We're in the situation of the apostles after they saw the miracle. We're not wondering about Jesus' authority. He's already proven it to us. He has not only calmed one storm on a lake, he has taken on our biggest fear, which is death. He's already taken on the bigger storm. And he's definitively calmed it, conquered it, really. He has already conquered the storm that we fear the most. Think about the Passion. That's where the real storm was. And the apostles were asleep. Remember, the apostles fell asleep in the garden. Jesus took on the whole weight of sin and death. They didn't even know what he was doing. So when he asks us, why are you terrified? He's asking us not about this storm or that storm or this thing that we're afraid of. He's asking about our faith in him. Faith is the antidote to fear. No matter what we're afraid of, faith is the antidote. Life is full of storms. We all face them. In fact, we face them pretty frequently. And we will face many more. That's certain. And ultimately, we will face the death of our loved ones, and we will face our own death. And that's scary stuff. That's the kind of thing people don't even want to think of. The loss of loved ones and the loss of our own life. But that's where faith applies the most. In fact, if we can't apply faith to the big storms, well, then what good is it? If we can't apply faith to the things we fear the most, well, then what good is it? It doesn't really do us any good. That's why, you know, St. Paul, when talking about the resurrection, if there's no resurrection, well, then the whole project of faith is a waste of time. We're pitiful. So faith applies to the big storms. Okay, well, now this COVID-19 pandemic is a big storm, no doubt about that. It has shaken and is shaking us on almost every level. I don't even have to explain it. I mean, we all know it. We've lived in it so long. Just a couple of days ago, we had a funeral mass here in the chapel for a friend of our community who died of COVID-19. In fact, these fancy flowers that are here, they were left behind by the family when they brought the urn of the woman. They had lots of flowers and they left some of them here. So it's a reminder to me anyway that funeral was here. So this woman and her husband and her daughter were all infected. The daughter stayed home. The husband and the wife went to the hospital. The wife died. The husband the next day was discharged. And at the mass, he was sitting here in the front pew with his daughter. They're in perfectly good health. And the wife, her urn is here in front of the altar. So that was the contradictory evidence in front of us. What was I supposed to say? I'm sorry that she died and you lived. Where's God here? Does God love you more than your wife? That's what people would look. If God was powerful, he would have saved her too. If God was loving, why did she die and he live? Of course, we have to get past that superficial impression, and this is what I tried to do in the funeral mass. God is more powerful than COVID-19. That's why you two are healed. He's sitting in the front pew. God is more powerful than death. That's why he saved her too. Even if we die, we live. That's faith. Even if we die, we live. Death is not a defeat of us. Death itself has been defeated. The storm of death has been defeated. So the point is not that we won't have storms. We will have storms, bigger than we can imagine. What storms are you facing right now? Probably if I dug into your hearts, I would find lots of turmoil, fears, personal struggles. If you want to have a storm, just get into the social media. Put one toe into that lake and you'll see a tsunami. Especially if you say something about chastity or about truth or about faith. Big waves and strong winds will start to threaten you. Maybe even physical threats, maybe not against your life, but threatening your reputation. Or you might even be threatened with shutting down your account. Storms. Well, same-sex attraction can be a very big storm. I don't have to say that to members of Courage, my goodness. It's a storm, and sometimes it's a very stormy journey. That's not the only storm. Anger is a storm. Loneliness is a storm. A breakdown of family relationships is a storm. Losing your job is a storm. Lots of them. This is why in Courage, we're familiar with this storm of same-sex attraction and its various effects on our peace. So that's why in Courage we support one another, support group. It's not that people who join Courage are not going to face storms anymore, or they're not going to face temptations anymore. It's that one member's faith strengthens another member's faith. Faith is stronger when you have people journeying together. We're not in this storm alone. In fact, Jesus is with us. That's the main point. He's with us in the boat, and he's not asleep. He's not uncaring. He's with us, and he's with us in one another. He's with us in the church. He's with us in the sacraments. So we can persevere through the storms of life. Yes, we can. With confidence, with joy, with peace. I was thinking about St. Joseph. Of course, today's Father's Day, and Joseph is a great father figure. St. Joseph, the man of faith, the man of persevering faith. Did he face storms? Yes, he did. Big storms, and we know of several of them. First of all, the news about his wife being pregnant, that was a huge storm. And then the storm in Bethlehem, when the threat against his life, he had to get up that night and head to Egypt. The whole journey to Egypt, the whole time in Egypt, a storm. And there were many others. So what does Joseph do in storms? We have a picture of Joseph here. And this is the year of St. Joseph. What does he do in a storm? Well, he puts his trust in God, and he protects his family and his loved ones. He does what a father does, what a good father does. We are reminded on Father's Day, because this is the only Father's Day we're going to have in the year of St. Joseph, so that's why I'm bringing him up. We're reminded of the gift of fatherhood and of Joseph's fatherhood over us. Now, to transition a little bit to my next reflection, just imagine a father and a mother in a boat on a stormy sea with a child. What does the mother do? She holds the child. She protects the child. What does the father do? He takes care of the boat. He takes care of the leak. He bails out the water. He tries to direct the boat into a safe harbor. Or he'll do whatever he can. Now, I'm not saying that men can't protect children and women can't repair boats. Don't get me wrong here. But what I'm trying to point out here is that men and women have different but complementary ways of protecting the family. Just like Joseph and Mary have different roles in the church. And the complementarity of men and women is one of the most beautiful aspects of life. We had it in our prayer right before the Mass. That was the Noah's Ark prayer. It stresses this beautiful aspect of God's plan for the human family, men and women. And this very thing is facing an unprecedented storm. That's where my reflections have gone here. And I'm not talking about SSA here. I'm talking about the ideology of transgenderism, the storm of the ideology of transgenderism, which is different. And it's getting worse, and it's going to get worse. I think we have to be realistic about it. It's one thing for a man to be attracted to another man, and Courage is well acquainted with this issue. But it's another thing for a man to say, I'm not a man, or for a woman to say, I'm not a woman. That's a completely different thing, because it's a denial of reality. When a man says, I'm attracted to another man, that's real. That's a real attraction, and it has to be identified. Doesn't have to be followed, but it has to be identified. That's the truth. Live in the truth. The truth will set you free. But to say, I'm not a man, or for a woman to say, I'm not a woman, that is not true. And that does not set people free. That's exactly what's happening now. I've known lots and lots of men in Courage over the years. And I think almost all of them, I can only think of one example actually of that wasn't true, but all of them have known and acknowledged that they are men. Men attracted to men, and that's the reality. The idea that they're actually or really women trapped in a man's body that did not fit their experience. I don't know yourself. I mean, I'm not speaking for any particular person, but I don't think that's what most members of Courage experience. They don't think I'm a woman trapped in an end bunny. And maybe that idea would never even enter your mind. I don't think it's that common. But it's becoming common. That's why I'm mentioning this as a storm. A man might feel like he doesn't fit into the world of a man, but he still knows he's a man. A man might feel more comfortable with women, but it doesn't mean he's a woman, and he doesn't think he is a woman. But this is the change here. This the prevailing and the almost required opinion now is that people can and should change their gender. So here we are, Pride Month. It's Pride Month. As I say, we're flooded with rainbows now, and everybody puts a rainbow on every sign and uniform and advertisement and website, and because no one can dare to not be on the same path as Pride. No one can dare to be against Pride. But there's a very major fragmentation in the LGBT world because it's impossible to support the goal of every different form of sexual expression. There's a built-in tension between gay activism and trans activism. It's logically obvious. I know that people deny that there's a tension, but it's a real division, latent in the movement. Now, not among adults who are saying love is love and everyone should be accepted for who he is or who she is or who they are. Everyone has a right to be themselves. No one disputes that. Where it really comes out is in the agenda being forced on young people. And this is the storm I want to identify, especially this. Young people are being subjected to something that most of the Courage members who are members now were not subjected to when they were 13 years old or 12 years old. If a young man, 13, 14 years old, not inclined to aggressive, rough sports, or maybe not, maybe has effeminate mannerisms, maybe he's not comfortable around his male peers. The gay activist says that young boy is gay. He's gay, make him gay, affirm his gayness, pride, rainbow, everything. He's gay. The trans activist says that young boy is trans. Make him a trans woman. Make him a trans woman. Affirm his true female gender. Give him hormone blockers. Put him on a path to womanhood. Pride. Rainbow. It's a completely different goal. It's a completely different agenda. It can't be both. And that storm is brewing. And just watch. You can watch the celebrities get swamped by the waves. As soon as somebody says something that doesn't fit one agenda or another, storms of controversy. Attacks. And then, after that, floods of apologies. You can see how unstable the whole thing is. Okay. Now, I say most Courage members did not grow up with this kind of pressure, but it's changing. It's hard enough to deal with same-sex attraction. That's for sure. But what if a young person, a young man, especially I think of young men, 12 years old, 13 years old, living with confusion, with same-sex attraction, with uncertainty, what if he's told he's really a woman? Well, he doesn't know. Who knows himself when he's 13 years old? So if someone comes along, and that someone is online, I mean, it's a social media, and the parents who are 35, 40, 40 years old, they don't know anything about this because that wasn't part of their experience. So their teenage children are being flooded with this kind of argument and swamped by it. Okay, well, our mission, I don't have to stress the storm, our mission, Courage's mission, but the whole Christian mission in regard to these young people is to affirm their real identity. First of all, to reveal that Jesus is with them in their boat in this storm. They're not alone. Jesus is with them. Jesus loves them. He's not asleep. He really loves these young people, and he cares for what's really good for them. That's the message we have. That each person is a child of God. Each person has dignity. And that chastity is the best way to live as a child of God. That's the truth. Not only the best way, it's the only way. That's the great news we have. It's the only way to live free and peaceful, calm, in a stormy world. Chastity. Well, we will be increasingly opposed for saying things like this. I'm sure you know it. We will be attacked more and more for this. Truth is unpopular these days. How long will it be before we can no longer even have live stream on Facebook, a mass like this, because it doesn't fit the Facebook acceptable discourse protocol, or whatever they call it. I don't know how long it will be. In some ways, it doesn't matter, in some ways. But why? Because the whole point is that Jesus is with us. The point is not that there's a storm or not a storm. There will be a storm, might get bigger, smaller, another one will come along. But Jesus is with us in the storm. He's with us before there's a storm. He's with us in the most violent storm. He's with us after the storm. That's what we know by faith. And the essential thing is that we respond to him with stronger and stronger faith. That's the essential thing. Faith. Jesus asks, why are you terrified? Terrified of the virus. Terrified of the variants. Terrified of the vaccines. You know, a lot of people are terrified of the vaccines. And terrified of not having the vaccines. Terrified of people who get the vaccine. Terrified of people who don't get the vaccine. Everybody's terrified. That's not a response of faith. People are terrified of the strong LGBT activists and the strong attacks on marriage, on family, on fatherhood, on motherhood. Terrified of transgender ideology. Terrified of the flight from reality itself. These are scary things. But we do not live in terror. Jesus says, why are you terrified? Do you still not yet have faith? And we say, in this Mass, we say in courage, we say in the church, we do have faith. Maybe we're weak. Maybe we need to help one another in the journey, but we do have faith. We stand with St. Joseph, we stand with our Blessed Mother, and we say, we believe. We believe. Our focus is not on the storm, it's not on Pride Month, our focus is on the Sacred Heart of Jesus, in June especially, the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Jesus, we trust in you. Jesus, we trust in you. And so we don't fear any storm.